In the time of the Prophet Muhammad in the 7th century AD, women had a voice in the traditions suggesting how Islam was intended to govern their lives. Muhammad had over 600 female followers, and one Islamic scribe, Ibn Sa'd, writing in the 8th century, says the women handed down more than 1,000 of the hadiths or suggestions for the practice of Islam. That includes the role and rights of women. Muslim women are still very interested in defining themselves, and today they can turn to cyberspace to do it. In the second of our series on cyber Islam, NPR's Devar Ardalan examines how the internet has become a safe portal in which the notion of the ideal Muslim woman can be tested, expanded, and recreated.
Just outside Daytona Beach, Florida, Noreen picks up her 8-month-old daughter, Nafisa, to play.
Hi, baby. Good girl.
She's a good baby, mashallah.
She has 4 children, and she says raising her children and developing a strong family is a big part of her role as a woman in Islam. In many ways, she is a traditional Muslim woman who chooses to wear the Islamic veil and to stay home with her children. She is also the CEO of a thriving home-based internet company. It's called TwoMuslimGirls.com. She shows her husband some of the new merchandise that's just come in.
He said he was interested in the blue, red, and orange, yellow.
Yeah, those are good sellers. I like those.
Yeah. He's working. He left his phone number, so you might want to call him
I'll
back.
Yeah, I'll call him back.
Noreen's website sells headscarves, long overgarments called abayas, and Islamic wedding dresses with intricate embroideries. Noreen says before the internet, many Muslim women would give money and a shopping list to anyone traveling to an Islamic country. They'd wait a long time, and they'd never get the exact size or color they were looking for. So she teamed up with a girlfriend and founded a company that designs and manufactures Islamic clothing. Noreen says in the first 2 months of operation, her website saw a 500% rise in demand.
I have people in places you wouldn't even imagine a Muslim would live. You know, I have Iowa, Idaho, North Dakota. The majority of my customers are Muslim converts, American women that have become Muslim.
Noreen is a convert herself. Raised Southern Baptist in Florida, she turned to Islam 10 years ago when she was working in Bahrain. But she met her husband, Mohideen Khawaya, here in the U.S. He's an airline pilot from India. Mohideen says running a website from home allows her to manage her primary responsibility of taking care of the children. She works online when the kids are in school or asleep, but Mohideen says she still manages to make this a very successful business, and the money is hers to keep.
Islamically, there's the duty of the man to earn for the family and to provide for the family. So in that sense, whatever money she earns and whatever money that she had inherited or she brings with her is hers to keep. So according to basic Islamic law, she's entitled to all of her income.
In fact, he says the first person to convert to Islam back in the 7th century was a wealthy businesswoman by the name of Khadija. She was also the wife of Muhammad, the founder of Islam. Muhammad is said to have encouraged women to participate actively in business, community decision-making, and even combat. But Samir Hatoud says today Muslim women don't necessarily have the same status Muhammad granted them in the 7th century.
There are stories of women sitting around with Prophet Muhammad, along with men, having discussions after the prayer, and the Prophet Muhammad would give his opinion, and a woman would disagree with him. And I mean, if you wanted to do that at a center now and disagree with the imam, it would be scandalous.
Hatoud is co-founder of the Muslim Women's League in Los Angeles. She says in some Islamic centers in the U.S., for example, women aren't allowed to vote in local center elections. Some aren't even allowed to pray in mosques. She says it all comes down to centuries of misinterpretation of Islamic tradition. And it's in cyberspace where these old, cumbersome ideas are being challenged. The Muslim Women's League website posts background articles analyzing women's inheritance, marriage, divorce, and political rights in regard to Islam. She says women go online to discuss and debate their rights, and it prepares them to take that discussion to the mosque.
It gives you that confidence when you're having a debate with someone because you've already kind of gone through the points, you've had your debate, and they've given you their counter-arguments, and you've countered their counter-arguments, so you're ready. So when somebody comes and says, women shouldn't pray at the mosque, you can say, oh no, but of course women can pray at the mosque, and here's why.
And engaging in this type of discourse is not limited to American Muslim women.
Sakina Jan, salam, halat chetere.
Two Muslim women are talking on the telephone, discussing an upcoming technology conference. One is the head of a U.S.-based women's organization, and the other runs a learning institute for Afghan refugee women in Peshawar, Pakistan. Speaking from her cell phone from her offices in Peshawar, Sakina Yakubi says hundreds of women come to her institute to access the internet and get computer training.
This computer program has been very, very effective. And these women really need to have access to that because Afghanistan don't have books, they don't have libraries. So right now is the internet the only source of education that they can get through the ERA.
Even though they don't have a library and limited resources, Yakubi has been able to accomplish a lot. So far, her institute has trained 110 Afghan women in bookkeeping, management, and accounting. The computers and training material for Yakubi's institute in Afghanistan came from the Women's Learning Partnership. WLP also webcasts women's conferences.
In today's program, we will have Charlotte Bunch from the United States and founder and executive director of the Center for Women's Global Leadership.
LearningPartnership.org also has a bulletin board to exchange ideas and information about how Muslim women live in different countries. Mahnaz Afghami is the executive director of the Women's Learning Partnership. She says most Muslim countries adhere to Islamic laws or Sharia, but some have a stricter interpretation of the laws than others. For example, a woman living in Saudi Arabia, where polygamy is common, can learn that Muslim women in other countries live under different marriage rules.
So when people share this, you see, they learn from each other. You know, they learn to say, okay, look, in such a country, which is also Muslim, which is also using the Sharia, this is being done. And that, of course, has a lot of impact, both on the legislature of these countries and the governments and also on the rest of the population. So communication is a consciousness-raising vehicle.
And the web is also being used to encourage intellectual vigor in the field of Muslim women's studies. At MuslimWomenStudies.com, Dr. Mona Abulfadl is developing a cyber learning environment that taps into the legacy of women in Islam.
It's really fascinating. The first university in the Muslim world was founded by a woman. Yes.
Dr. Abulfadl is sitting in her office just outside Leesburg, Virginia. Here at the Graduate School of Islamic and Social Sciences, she plans to transfer her coursework on Muslim women's studies to the internet. Dr. Abulfadl says it's important for Muslim women not only to understand their rights in Islam, but also to go back and recognize their own history. She recalls, for example, the story of Fatima al-Fihriya, the founder of that first Islamic university in Morocco.
She was a very pious woman, and she was part of the ruling family. And she decided that it was important to found an institution for learning, building that institution that would perpetuate learning in her community, perpetuate the Quran and the religious sciences. And she chose a way to leave her seed on earth that would profit and benefit the community and be a perpetual, as it were, charity that would be remembered by posterity.
By taking Muslim women's studies courses online, the internet becomes the new madrasa, or as Dr. Abulfadl says, the new Islamic perpetual learning institution.
And thinking in terms of Muslim women, I find the web an ideal environment and medium for translating a lot of what I deep down believe about the universality of the community, what is called in our idiom as the ummah.
If cyberspace proves to nurture a diverse ummah or community of the future, Abulfadl says its foundation should be the past, the inspiration of women like Fatima and Khadija, and the hundreds of women who back in the 7th century helped develop the first Islamic community during the time of Muhammad. Devar Ardalan, NPR News, Washington.
Next weekend, in our final segment on cyber Islam, NPR religion correspondent Duncan Moon explores how the web has altered who speaks for the religion and how Islam itself might be changing as a result. For more on our series, go to our website at npr.org.